Good afternoon. Welcome to We the People. You have no idea how quickly we just got here. And for all those people that I sped past, I'm so sorry. And every now and then you see people speeding and you don't know what they're doing. They might have a radio show.
That's right.
It could happen.
Yeah, it might be 15 minutes late.
Yeah, or something. And poor Bill, he's sick, so we'll have to...
Yeah, we'll have to
give
my mic is like blowing my ears out.
And that's plus, right. He's just been on Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, so...
Mm-hmm.
We were at Disney World. I don't think we actually went on a ride that fast, though.
No, we didn't.
That was
definitely an e-ticket right there.
Yeah, it was e-ticket ride. So, yeah. All that disclaimer being said, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff. And our sponsor...
Maybe that's my confession for the day.
Yeah. Our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere Kubota tractor dealer. And if you want a great deal on a tractor, go out and see the folks out there. They've got pretty good inventory right now. And they've got a couple of used machines out there if you're looking for a used tractor.
Hot commodity.
Yeah, I hardly find those anywhere. But, yeah, go out and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. Or you can get them on the web at ReddingTractors.com.
Sweet website.
Phone number. Did I give you the phone number?
No.
530-226-9226.
I have to do the part I know.
Yeah.
That's the only part I know. Sometimes I get it right and sometimes I don't, which makes me unreliable on the commercial end. That's not good. So you can find all sorts of things about us, and I know you're going to want to send this show to your friends because, you know, if you suffered through the Kavanaugh hearings and you just couldn't take one more second of it, today is sort of like the reverse engineer of that whole thing, and we're going to have just a little bit of fun with the music. So if you want to call and tell someone that you're mad that I'm not a Women's March pink hat wearer, I am wearing a pink shirt today. Not that I can prove that over the air, but I am wearing a pink shirt, but I won't be wearing a pink hat because I just don't go in for that. I just don't. And anyone who knows me knows that. But just as a disclaimer on the show, the station doesn't get to tell us what to say or not say. How's that? So they can't take credit or be blamed. So it's all us. But you can go to wethepeopleradio.us and, sound off there, I suppose. Because we, and every now and then you meet people that are super interesting. And you're like, ooh, this would make a great radio program. And I got to tell you, we're going to do another one. She doesn't know it yet. But our guest, Chris Enns, is going to be our hostage for another Sunday at some point because she has, let me see, I want to get my facts straight.
She's written like 40 books?
Yeah, about women in the Old West.
Yeah.
So you would think this would be a big pink hat fest, huh?
Yeah.
No, women in the Old West were like stalwart.
It's like when women were
tough.
Women and men were...
afraid of them.
Yeah.
Because they carried guns and stuff. You know, and women had some gumption, you know, before we all just laid down and demanded people believe us about nothing because we're women.
They were hardy.
They were hardy. I couldn't find any songs about that, though. So let's see. Let me actually refer to the bio so I get it right. And you really ought to go to the page because her website is awesome. It's chrisenns.com, C-H-R-I-S-E-N-S-S. Her last name is deceptively simple, E-N-S-S. She is a New York Times bestselling author who's been writing about women of the Old West for more than 18 years. She's penned more than 40 published books on the subject. And her book, Entertaining Ladies, Actresses, Singers, and Dancers in the Old West, was a Spur Award finalist in 2017. The Spur Award. What a great award. Her book, Mochi's War, The Tragedy of the Sand Creek Massacre, received the Will Rogers Medallion Award for Best Nonfiction Western in 2015. And her book entitled Object Matrimony, The Risky Business of Mail Order Matchmaking in the Western Frontier, won the Elmer Kelton Award for Best Nonfiction Book of 2013. Really fun. She lives in Nevada County, and she got the Citizen of the Year Award from the Nevada County Historical Society for preserving the history of the gold country in the West. So she's got a really wide range of information on that. And she's written some really – I was looking at the cool book on Annie Oakley. I'd love to talk to her about that. But we wound up having a conversation about false allegations. Imagine that. False allegations of child molestation. And so that goes to a case about her brother and what happens when your family is hit with something like that, how difficult it is to defend against. And in an effort to, and I'm sure she'll tell us all this, but just by way of spoiler alert, in an effort to help her brother, she wound up getting her private investigator's license. And at that point, I'm like, oh my gosh, how quickly can we do the show? Because I can't stand it. We need to know more. So we're going to talk about all that kind of stuff. And I'm just going to tell you the music is going to be fun. So if you don't like, you know, a blast from the past, some of the songs that they wrote about bad women and bad relationships with women, you're probably not going to like the music. But, you know, if you're just burned out on the whole Kavanaugh thing, you're going to like it. This will be a feast for you.
What are you saying? There was bad women there?
Too many to count.
Yeah.
So anyway, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. So we've got about 3 minutes till our first break. Sorry about that, Chris. We started off a little kooky. But thank goodness you called us, because the reason we were late is I had to go home and get my phone so I could call you. But you're like way smarter than I am, so you already called in.
Am I on?
You are on. Welcome, Chris.
I was being very quiet because I didn't know if I was on.
Oh, it's okay. So. You can always pipe up. We're not all about the perfection. It's definitely not our goal.
I'm glad to be part of the broadcast today. Thank you very much for letting me come on and talk about a subject that Aaron, you and I discussed and quite fed up with. So it'd be good to get into the meat of this discussion.
Well, it's one of those topics that there are women who talk about this, but not enough. You know, most of these women have been cowed into some sort of, we have to believe all women regardless of what they say because an allegation must be true if someone says it.
Well, it's their
truth.
Like,
oh, I'm sorry. Wasn't that the Salem witch trials?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the letters to the editor that I read this past week in the Union newspaper here in Grass Valley.
No.
That was one of the key sentences, was women should be believed. And there was no other caveat to it other than women should be believed. And I really think it needs to be prefaced only if they are telling the truth.
I heard that the other day on the radio. One of the announcers was saying that Ford's was telling the truth, and that's her truth, so we have to believe it because she said it was true.
Wow.
That's all we need.
So I can go out and get in someone else's car, and as long as I can start it, I believe it's mine, I can drive away.
It's your car.
There you go.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is, being on the other side of this, as Aaron said, the agenda. Being on the other side of this,
I think we're going to use that word a lot today.
Yeah, you were deemed as somebody who is not championing women as a whole, and certainly that isn't the message that I want to portray. But just because I'm a private investigator, and the bulk of the cases I take are people who have been falsely accused of child molestation or sexual misconduct. My background has been women who have falsified this particular event happening in their life. And they do it because they can.
Right.
And now they can even more.
Right. I mean, it is the, as far as I'm concerned, it's the perfect crime. You don't have to have anything to back it up with.
But it's not a new crime. This has been going on for years and years and years. I mean, speaking as a white male, divorced, a nasty divorce.
How'd you get in here?
With two children, both females. That hung over my head with this woman for 15 years.
She pulled every dirty trick except that one.
All she had to do was make a phone call, and there's no way to defend yourself.
It's unfortunate that is the truth, but that is the pure truth of it. And we are now being made aware of this because of the situation with Kavanaugh, which could be both good and bad. It's a blessing to some degree that now that has been brought to the forefront of everyone's thought. And certainly this hashtag #MeToo, which I don't even know what that even means anymore.
Yeah, me too.
But, I'm sure we'll redefine it as our time goes by today.
You know, I mean, it is, my position on Kavanaugh, and just with my background working in private investigation and with people who make up things, I have this past week, and I'm very vocal about it. I'm not shy. There's a section on my website called The Plea, which is all about my brother's story, which I know that you've set it up a little bit, but I mean, I'll talk a little bit more about that as we go on to the broadcast too. But I have had three people this past week, women that I have worked with and the various organizations that I have worked with, that have written me and said, I cannot be your friend anymore because of your stance on Kavanaugh.
Just unbelievable.
I think, for a moment, I read this and I thought, I don't understand.
Carol, where's the LOL at the end?
Yeah, I just thought, so we cannot, it has to be, Ford has to be believed across the board, even though there are numerous things, as a private investigator, if I was going into her particular story, that I would have said, red flag, that I would never have. If I was working for the prosecution, I never would have said, you can't bring any, I would have said, you can't bring any charges against this person. There's nothing there. You're going to get killed on the stand.
Well, see, that's just it. You know, there's your truth and there's my truth,
but then
both
there's
of
the,
which hold the same amount of water, but you got to have some facts to back it up.
But then there's the agenda.
That's right. Yeah.
We'll be right back. Cut Chris Isaak back, but it's a great song. Baby Did a Bad, Bad Thing. Seemed to fit today. So, Chris, where would you like to start out?
You know, I think it would be important if I started out with the background of why I got involved as a private investigator and maybe gave some background into my brother's story, which might be the story of other people who have been in similar circumstances. If that would be okay, if I could.
Absolutely.
No, that'd be fine. We personally know people that have had that exact same thing happen to them.
And, you know, it's much more prevalent than what the world would have you to believe. You know, if you just watch Kavanaugh, you think, oh, this is an isolated incident. But, I mean, it's much more widespread than people know. But my brother married a woman in the early 90s, and she had two children from a gentleman that she said was very abusive to her. The children were 9 months, and that was a little boy, and the little girl I don't think was quite two. Anyway, they were married for more than 12 years. My brother adopted the children. She ended up, my ex-sister-in-law was having an affair with the gentleman that she was working with, and when she went to pursue a divorce and get full custody of the children, because by that time they had had a child together. My brother had a daughter from a previous marriage, so in total they had four children. She went to find out about a divorce and was told she wasn't going to get full custody of the children. That's when these allegations of child molestation came up. The initial report of child molestation was made. The daughter at that point was 15 years old, and my brother was quite strict with the girls not dating. And
because he was a policeman, right?
He was a police officer. That's absolutely correct. Thank you, Aaron. He was a police officer for more than 20 years. He was also in the military and was a decorated soldier in Desert Storm and a Desert Shield. And my brother was very strict with his girls. You're not going to go out and date until you're 16 years old. You're just not going to do that. And his adopted daughter went to school and drew on the back of a test that she was taking a little girl in bed, or a girl in bed, crying. Now, the truth of it was she hadn't studied for the test and was really doing very poorly on the test, and that's what the drawing was on the back. But when she was called up by the teacher, she then went and told the counselor that it was because she was being molested.
Wow.
No truth to it whatsoever. She then came out and said that there was no truth to it, that because she hadn't studied. But the school, of course, had to call that in. They're mandated to call in such reports. And so that's what happened. My brother left the home. They came and Child Protective Services came and did a they did a whole investigation. The accusations were unsubstantiated. The divorce, my sister-in-law was having an affair. The marriage was going increasingly downhill from there. My brother didn't know she was having an affair at this point. Of course, none of us knew what was going on until after the fact. And then after they were unsubstantiated, the stepdaughter makes the accusation again. And my brother was one of four people that she accused of molestation. One was my nephew, the other was a neighbor, and the other one was a bus driver. She realized the attention that she was getting from this kind of thing, and she was quite vocal about it, and it made no sense that she would have taken this kind of thing anyway, because I babysit for a couple of times, and I couldn't even get her to wash her hair. She would just tell me to go F myself.
Sounds like a lovely girl.
Yeah.
She was wonderful. So to think for a moment that she was shy. And then she said that this molestation from my brother happened every week, two and three times a week, for more than 2 years. And it happened every morning while everybody was in the home between 6 and 6:10. And that he would call her downstairs and entice her to, by looking at pornography.
Wow.
Which at this particular point in the 90s, or sorry, it was in early 2000s, they had dial-up. Which to download any of that stuff in a 10-minute period. So he was supposed to have gotten her up, taken her downstairs, downloaded this stuff, had intercourse with her, and then no one knew what was going on. When everybody got up. I mean, everyone was at home, she said. Safe exams were done.
What does that mean?
Safe exams are what, it's kind of like a rape kit that was done. And it showed that she had an intact hymen. So, being able to say that she had sexual intercourse with my brother two and three times a week, every week for more than 2 years, physically, there was nothing to support that allegation. But once you make this kind of statement, it's out there.
Sure.
So my brother, of course, when she makes these allegations, one happened in the school. It was unsubstantiated. The second one she made on Father's Day of 2004. And he hotlined himself because he was a police officer. And then it just started to get worse after that. He was a police officer, and his job with the police department was to investigate people who were molesting children. And so in his desk at his work were things like what is called the pedophile handbook. Not a how-to, but if you're a law enforcement agent, it's a pedophile handbook on what to look for.
Look for, yeah.
And that's what they call it, the pedophile handbook. But you have a teenager who makes this accusation, and then you have this kind of thing that was in your desk drawer. Also, he had a laptop, and on the laptop was quite a few hits to a site called Petoland, P-E-T-O-L-A-N-D, Petoland. But the prosecution said that it was Ped, P-E-D-O-L-A-N-D, Petoland. Petoland was a game that his children played on his laptop where you take care of a virtual pet.
Oh, my gosh.
So no one actually opened the program and looked at it?
No. What they did say was he had items on his laptop that were indicative of child porn.
Wow.
Not child porn, but indicative of child porn. So you can see from what I've said, you've got a substantial, a case of substantial evidence mounting against him. And that's all it was. Not substantial evidence. What am I trying to say?
Circumstantial?
Circumstantial evidence. So none of it would hold up. I mean, I ended up going in to meet with an attorney, and because at this point my brother also has Parkinson's disease. I forgot to mention that people with Parkinson's disease have a great deal of problems. I mean, he shakes continually. I mean, he had been with the police department for a number of years, and his career was going to be winding down anyway because of the Parkinson's disease. But just all of these things started to mount up, and then hiring an attorney and hiring the best attorney that we could. My husband and I, when all was said and done, it was $345,000 that we spent hiring an attorney. She got on the stand 3 times and said that she lied.
The girl did?
Yes. And all of that, all of this evidence that I'm telling you about is on my website under the plea, and you can see it there. You can see all the times that she was on the stand and lied. I have all of the court, the records there that they hold in court, that you can see that, where she says, yes, I lied about my father, and I would do it again.
Wow.
Wow.
So they had circumstantial evidence and no victim.
Circumstantial evidence, no victim, but it doesn't make any difference, because when I brought that up, the prosecution said, it doesn't matter. That's what people who have been molested say. They say it happens, then they say it didn't happen.
Well.
So I don't know what to believe then. And you have a great deal of the physical evidence. I mean, I also put on the on my site is from the physicians, 2 physicians that say, and you can read it, it will say, there is no physical evidence that supports that this teenager has had any sexual intercourse. It says that. None of those things made any difference. They said that our attorney said that there's a 97% conviction rate when you take these matters to court, because all the jury sees is a crying teenager pointing to the person that they say did it, and
everything else kind of goes down.
They don't hear anything and they don't see anything.
That's
97% conviction rate.
I could kind of see that. I mean, although it's bad, I could see that happening. We're going to take a really quick break here.
Okay.
And we're going to come back with our guest, Chris N., so you can find all our information at wethepeopleradio.us. And we're going to go out with Little White Lies by Sammy Hagar.
Little White Lies been around for years. Little White Lies ringing in your ears. You turn around, come around back on you. Catching up to you. Little white lies, see what you got to. Little white lies, come back to haunt you. Little white lies, got what you got to. Little white lies. You're taking my life, so take my soul.
Those are my 2 liar songs. The rest are all about bad women.
Very good. Very fitting.
We tried to find some good stuff for you.
Very fitting.
Yeah, that was Three Dog Night, just in case anybody wants to go hear the rest of the song.
Chris, your story should be a huge wake-up call for the men in this world.
Oh my gosh! If the hearing wasn't, you're lost.
And it's been this way for a while. I mean, I've been fully aware of it. You just can't put yourself in a position where somebody could make a totally unsubstantiated allegation against you. You can't protect yourself from that. You can't defend yourself from something that didn't happen. You know, so.
Well, and you know what's very unfortunate, because I have been a private investigator for a number of years, and these are the cases that I take on, and many men who are going through divorce. I mean, I have been in the room with them when the lawyer for the wife will say, you know, you can make this easy on yourself, or we can say that there was molestation that occurred.
I mean, that
will say that, because
that
they are
horrible.
Very much aware that you can make that kind of thing stick.
Yeah, even if they can't prove it, I think society will look at you as getting off on a technicality. You know, it's going to hang around your
neck.
You
get the finger pointed at you for a deal like that, and you're doomed.
Yeah, yeah.
It takes away everything a man was and everything he's ever going to be.
Yep.
It just does. And there is no question about whether or not we're parsing words here, or whether or not that's an opinion. It is. I mean, I work in this particular area, and I can tell you, this particular gentleman that I met with this past month, once this kind of allegation is made, you have to spend a great deal of time going through and creating a timeline for yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And then how you go forward, which was, you know, I instructed him, you're going to need to have somebody with you when you're with your kids. You're going to have cameras in places. You're going to have to write down what you do. When the gentleman just said, I don't know that I can live my life like that. It's easier for me to sign away my children than to have to put up with this.
Yeah.
Which is, it's a sad, crying shame that that's, on one hand, you think, well, who would ever do that? But, I mean, you have to live your whole life trying to defend yourself against something that you think is going to come up anyway, because now you can go back to 37 years and say something happened.
With no proof whatsoever.
Right. And I think all of that, you have to be, it would be irresponsible of me to say that everybody who says that is lying. Everybody who makes an accusation is lying, and I wouldn't begin to make that statement. When I go and investigate these particular things, and I go into a home and I see a young girl, when I go into the young girl's bedroom and I see that she's got a dresser that she frequently moves, you can tell that there's markings on the floor that she's moved in front of the door to block it at night. When she's got boxes stacked up that she puts in front of the door, I tend to believe that what this young woman is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have something of you have to be able to back it up with something. You have to have dates and times, something that makes sense. But so much of what is happening is an allegation is made, and that's all that you need. In the case with my brother, certainly that's all that was necessary, was an allegation, and all the other circumstantial pieces put together, and then being told by our attorney that I'd heard from my brother that there's a 97% conviction rate.
Yeah. So now, at that point, continue on. What happened after that?
I was at this point. Now we're at 2006. This happened in 2004. This has been going on for a couple of years with him. Now we're in latter part of 2005, early part of 2006, in which my brother was now being held. He was now being held in a facility because of all of this. It was a jail sort of, but he was being held in a facility. In this facility where he was being held, he ends up being beaten and raped, and he has Parkinson's disease. Now, because this is where you have to go. You have to be in this situation while you're waiting to be, whether this is going to go to trial or what. Beaten and raped with Parkinson's disease. I'm at this point named his guardian, and they call me in, and the attorney says to me, my attorney's on one side with a private investigator who did nothing, and several other banks of lawyers that say this, the we suggest that you take a plea. The plea that the prosecution is offering is, at this particular time that I'm talking to you, the plea is now 18 years. For every hour you don't take this plea, they're going to raise that year, they're going to raise that time by a year. Well, I'm unable to get a hold of my brother, even if I could. He's in no position. He's now completely traumatized. And in a medical unit, there's nothing I'm just trying to figure out what to do. I'm being told there's a 97% conviction rate. Trying to figure out what to do. 2 hours passed. We're now 20 years.
Oh.
I end up saying, yes, we'll take the plea. I didn't know what to do.
And at the time, you weren't a private investigator.
I wasn't a private investigator.
You were writing books about the Old West.
I have never, my background in law enforcement and anything having to do with attorneys was based on everything I saw on L.A. law.
Oh, no. Or like us.
Or anything that I saw on Matlock. I never imagined this for the life of me. I would never imagine that they would take circumstantial evidence, and especially in this particular instance, and want to do this. I never would imagine this would happen to somebody who's a decorated soldier. She had been to my niece had been to several counselors who said this person, and that I put the medical reports on there too, that said she is she's a habitual liar. I never would have imagined with all of that information that my attorney wouldn't be willing to take this forward. But you've got to be willing, too, as a defendant, to go the whole nine yards. And if it's a 97% conviction rate, and you're told that also I was told 97% conviction rate, if a guilty plea is returned, which they're telling me it's a 97% conviction rate, the prosecution was going to ask for two life sentences. Life is 33 years. And they were going to ask for two of those. So my choices at that point were, as I gave you, two life sentences if found guilty or 20 years for this plea. And I'm with an attorney after $345,000 who wasn't going to do any more than they did. I was between a rock and a hard spot. My brother, of course, 20 years. And it's been the most difficult 20 years. I mean, he's been in now for 16, and it has been nothing short of hell, where the family has been, my family, my parents, my brother and I and my husband have been through, we've been in a prison of our own, which is what prompted me to call Aaron to begin with about the prison situation. But I then became a private investigator and began investigating my brother's case. And that's when I found all the documents that showed that my niece was on the stand three separate times and said that she would lie. My attorney never even brought that
up. Oh, you didn't? You guys didn't know that?
No.
Oh.
I had no idea.
Was that all done in like some kind of closed? We don't know a lot about.
Okay, some of it was done in the divorce hearing when it was the child custody. She got on the stand then and said that she lied and would do it again. When the depositions were being taken for what she said happened to her, I did have a different attorney at that point before it got to this federal level, which it got to the federal level because they said that he had items on his laptop that were indicative of child porn. So I'll get to that in a minute. But her telling these lies, I didn't know anything about it until I got in and could get my hands on this evidence. That was my other mistake with attorneys. I believed that they were forthcoming, that they would be forthcoming, that they championed you. I didn't know that they didn't do that. I didn't know that most attorneys work things out by plea agreement. I had no idea. When I went in to meet with the attorneys, they didn't say, listen, most of what we do is plea agreement. I thought everything went to trial. That's not the case. It's not the case at all. As I said, with as a private investigator, one of the other things that I got a hold of was the things that they said were on my brother's computer, which was all of this, what they said was child pornography. I got this huge mass of information off of his laptop that they pulled, off of the home computers that they pulled, all the things that they said were indicative of child porn. Let me give you an example. One of the things they said was child porn was as I said, he had four children. They all used the computer at home. They all used his laptop computer. One of them was doing a report on the White House. Well, if you Google White House, you're going to get really unseemly sites. You just will. Somebody has figured out that people want to look up the White House, bought that particular site, and it's now really horrible, ugly things. Which, let me just say, too, that when people say it's child pornography, I don't mean to imply that it is children under the age of five doing horrible things. I mean we're talking young girls from the age of 15 to 18 who have taken pictures of themselves and put it on the Internet. That kind of thing is what they're calling child pornography, which I'm not saying my brother did that, but he had four children at home. One was a son. He was doing the report on the White House. If you type in the White House or whatever it is that they did, you don't get the White House from Washington, D.C. You get a pornography site.
Yeah, and once that's on your computer, you can't take it off.
And once that's there, that's there. Now, they attributed all of this to my brother, which was another one that's patently not true. But those are the kind of things. People will make up names for weather sites. A lot of these sites...
things that are frequently accessed.
For example, one of the weather sites that they looked at all the time is called Twisted Sister. Okay, now they said there's also a sister site, Sister Twisted, which is a child pornography site. But see, they said that those things were indicative of child porn. Now, I got this particular file and looked into every one of those sites, and except for the White House one, none of them had any pornography at all. They had words that were indicative of child porn.
Right.
As I said, Petoland, which is Petoland. But if you're the prosecution and you want to make a case stick...
Oh, yeah, that sounds horrible.
Yeah, you say it's Petoland. And that's the kind of thing that you bring up. If you don't know that on the other end, that's why I became a private investigator, not just because I wanted to get at the bottom of what happened with my brother, but just that I could not stand to have this happen to one more man.
Well, it's kind of amazing.
Good for you. We've got to take a really quick break on that point, but...
Okay.
You'll have to interrupt me.
It's all right. We have to interrupt ourselves. Ashley's over there giving us the high sign.
She interrupts
and then she
me
gives us the higher
time.
Sign and the higher sign. And, you know, we just keep ignoring her. It's terrible. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Look out. Show him the future's the past. Same cat with them.
we're back. Chris, I would imagine...
Another classic, by the way.
We're
not done with them. There are more.
Oh, I'm sure
our entire childhood was filled with songs like that.
Yeah.
I think it was like a harbinger of something to happen in the future, and we all know that these songs will never be played again, so this might be the last time you hear them.
Oh, and for the record, Twisted Sister is a rock group, too. So, I mean...
Yeah, it is.
FYI.
But you don't... But see, if it's... If that particular name is now associated with any kind of pornographic site,
right.
You cannot go on and look up Twisted Sister the band.
Yeah.
Because the prosecution won't say it's Twisted Sister the band.
Right.
and then most of your jurors, who are probably not, big rock and roll listeners. I mean,
well,
they don't. My mom wouldn't know what that is.
The break that prosecutors on cases like this. You know, you think, well, Jesus, they don't have a heart. I mean, to take a case like this to trial, when obviously the kid's lying, there is no real evidence, but the political ramifications of letting, you know...
Even then, what year was this?
This was in 2004 to 2006.
So it's not even current, and imagine what it is now.
Yeah.
I would imagine this is just... Yeah. Growing exponentially.
The women, they were women prosecutors who cut their teeth on getting sex traffickers.
Right.
Okay.
And they wanted to make a name for themselves.
That's it right there.
Bingo.
That's why they press these cases.
And so that's why now whenever I hear, oh, they're trafficking in sex, and I'm not trying to say that that doesn't happen, but now I look at everything with a very... very concentrated eye.
Yeah.
I want to know what you're talking about.
Because it does happen. It happens a lot. And my brother was a parole officer for his whole career, and he
for sex offenders
for sex crimes division.
Yeah.
And he told me that pretty much 100% of sex offenders will reoffend when they get out. They cannot be rehabilitated.
But I'll never forget standing in the airport with him. We were waiting for Bill's mom to come back from a trip, and standing there in the airport, just killing time, waiting. And he says,
was profiling
and
people.
He says, "Oh, you see that guy over there? Look at the way he's standing. He's a sex offender." And I'm like, "Really?"
Yeah.
And at that time, I'm thinking, "What?" And then he goes, "Oh, see that guy over there? Well, basically, it was every man that was in the airport." Was doing, standing a certain way. He was looking at something. I'm like, wait a minute. There can't be this many sex offenders. I mean, just Vegas odds wouldn't give you that
jaded,
many sex offenders.
You've got to get a jaded eye doing that your whole life. But some of the facts he had on that were
yeah, I mean, I get it that it's not a
compelling.
Probably a rehabilitated crime. But
there's a lot of it that, like your case, Chris, where... all they have to do is make the accusation.
And now you're in the system. Now you're labeled.
Now you're labeled,
right.
And it'll never come off.
And, you do have to make a differentiation between those two. And that's something that I believe that the far left doesn't want to do.
Oh,
they
no.
don't want to make that differentiation. It's everybody. If
well, these are people who don't want to spell woman with man in it, like W-O-M-A-N. Now they've started spelling it W-O-M-Y-N. It's like,
oh my God,
how tedious is that?
It's nuts.
Men are bad. All men are bad and abusers, and all women are victims. And at some point, this really does a massive disservice to women.
And
young girls.
It's, for me, as a woman, for me, and doing what I do part of the time for a living, I absolutely, whenever somebody says, oh, this person is being accused of child molestation, I never at this point think, okay, that's probably true. I always think, let me see.
Yeah.
Let's talk. Because the other thing is you have to ask, what are you defining as sexual misconduct or sexual molestation?
Yeah, because
sometimes...
It's like almost nothing. We know some
people... They spank their kids.
No, I'm thinking of those people, the friends of my mom's, and their son, their adult son, who was in his 20s or whatever, was in a... I'm going to get it wrong. I don't know if it was a national park or it was a national forest. It was something like that. It was a national...
On vacation.
National something or other. And he was a bike rider. and they were going bike riding. Well, they got there at like 4:30 in the morning. They were going on some up some mountain, and so they were changing into their bike riding clothes. And so they, you know, open the front door, open the back door of the vehicle, and just like stand in between and pull on their bike riding pants. There's nobody there. Nobody there. It's deserted. And a park ranger happened to see him. He wound up labeled as a sex offender.
Had to register as a sex offender.
Yeah.
And see, that is horrendous that we do that. Then you can't tell the difference between that person who hurt J.C. Lee Dugard and did everything that he did,
mm-hmm.
and the person like this biker that you're saying. Now, that's insane. I mean, I get hired by schools because they want to know about the blue dots around them. Who those sex offenders around them are.
Oh, they so you kind of drill in and figure out what their background is?
Well, yeah, you want to know, okay, what are they? I mean, they should be varying degrees of color, but they're not. So you don't know, there's nothing to differentiate a person, like I said, the Elizabeth Smart person, that guy who took Elizabeth Smart. There's no differentiation between a wacko like that and a guy that was 17 years old with his buddies and mooned a busload of other teenagers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy that mooned is now a sex offender. And that's one of the guys living around the school that they want to know, who is this person? That guy is not a threat. The guy who mooned someone at 17 is not a threat. He's a moron.
He's a bad decision maker.
Yeah.
And who didn't think that? I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, some of these things that people are saying are
That was always considered, I mean, things like that, we actually knew what category to put those in. I was a teacher a long time ago in my first life, and I remember I was on a trolley with a bunch of Girl Scouts, and this kid was on the football team, and they drove by in a Mustang, and one of them mooned the trolley. I mean, it was a Mustang, right? So how big was the window? You couldn't really see much, but I did catch the jersey number, and I was back in the 80s, but, you know, I put a giant pair of, tidy whities in an inner office envelope and sent it to the kid's classroom and said, I don't want to see that again. I mean, like, I basically mocked him. I could have made him a sex offender. That's horrible.
Yeah, see, that was, he could have.
I mean, I just embarrassed him, letting him know that, like, he really wasn't anonymous with his football jersey on, you know.
But see, there's no discernment now. No one can discern.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A stupid thing like that.
Good but thing I wasn't a mandated reporter, huh? I'd be in jail.
Yeah, and now they're forever having to be registered as a sex offender.
That is just ridiculous.
It's horrible. Hey,
and to get off that sex offender list, you know, that's in and of itself.
We're coming back with our guest, Chris Enns. Chris, we're going to take a quick break for the news. You can find all our information at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We'll be right back.